Welcome to the Freemasons Podcast, coming to you live from Morningstar Lodge number 47. Leave your aprons at the door, my brother.
Who I was until I put on the mask.
So, you're wearing a Spartan mask this morning.
I am.
Yeah. Okay. That's. I'm sure there's a story behind that.
There is.
Okay.
Of course, this is my plan.
Yeah. I don't know who that guy is wearing the mask over there, but hello and welcome to the Freemasons Podcast with your hosts,
Bane.
And worshipful brother Ken. And we're up here today, this morning, on this balmy early spring day here, Sunday morning. And we're going to talk about, what episode are we on? My God, 243. And we're going to be talking about the concept of brotherhood and camaraderie throughout history.
I cannot take off the mask. It would be extremely painful.
I'm going to wear that during the entire show. It really kind of messes with your voice a little bit.
It does mess with my voice.
Though. It's very, very nicely made, though. That's,
yes, it is.
Yeah.
So, shout out to a Discord brother, Tex. He made me this helmet for graduating the Judicial Martial Academy.
I can't imagine what the shipping cost on that thing was.
I have no idea.
It looks like it weighs 200 pounds. It's very, very well done. So, to describe it for those who may be listening, it is not just like banged out sheet metal. Like, this thing looks like a legitimate Spartan helmet. Like, it's got this bronze kind of look to it. It's all banged up, like it's taken some, you know, spear hits.
It's taken some hits.
It's taken some hits. And like the attention to detail is like amazing. Like, it looks like it came out of a museum.
So why am I wearing the mask?
Why am I wearing the mask?
So we're going to be talking about the concept.
Who is but the form following the function of what? And what I am is a man in a mask.
So I'm making jokes about Bane and all that stuff. But we're going to talk about the concept of brotherhood. Now, how does that tie into a mask? Well, we're going to start off talking about the concept of brotherhood throughout history. And what it really, how it eventually relates to Freemasonry and all that stuff. And where the concept of brotherhood comes from. And as we know, brotherhood is extremely important in Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. And but while we're on that, I'm going to look and see if there's any. Oh, no, God, I went into Discord. Don't do that.
No.
Don't do that. Move on, George.
Don't read the comments.
Don't reading the comments. Not reading the comments. But I'm going to look and see if we have. Nope. No more Apple reviews.
Slack. Oh.
Boo.
Come on, write us some reviews.
What do you got, Ken?
Even if they're not great, we'll take them anyway. We'll still read them on the air. You can be critical of us. I'll go over to Instagram and see what we've got here. Let's see.
So for anybody interested, I'm drinking a Fig Apple Red Bull. I wonder what this tastes like.
Oh, shit. Do describe, because there's some weird flavors out there.
Oh, it's freaking good.
Really?
Yeah. Try that shit.
Does it not taste like leopard piss?
Ooh,
like
I wouldn't do that, Clark. You got a lip fungus that's not identified yet.
What? I don't have lip fungus.
No. Jesus Christ. It's from
some movie that I haven't seen yet. That is
really National good. Lampoon's Christmas Vacation when he goes to give the kid a hug.
Oh,
ooh,
right.
I wouldn't do that.
That doesn't taste like Red Bull at all.
No.
It's like it's like one of those flavored sodas.
It's like a fig apple that's dancing in my mouth.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Very good. Well, so let's see, on Instagram, we've got some new followers. Just a few. I can't read all of them, I don't think. But let's see here. We've got, I think I left off with Jeff Dyer last time. So we've got Aaron Bruce, who is a brother of Liberty Continental Lodge, or the former Liberty Continental Lodge. Welcome, brother. South of Heaven, Victor Sins, FXDB, Timmy Wynn Jr., Mr. Misfit 06, Justice Wayne, Rob D. Ruffian, nice, Masonic Books, hey, thanks for following us, Artavan Agkaz.
Come on, Kenny, you can do it.
Arabi.
Power through it.
I don't know. It's called Unit 1 Police. William
switch to
Freeman.
The YouTube screen, please.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do it now.
I'm sorry. William Freeman, Seneca Lodge number 55. Hey, brothers. Bernardo Linares, Brendan Hickey, and the Paranormal Bloke. Thank you. Thank you, brothers and friends, for following us.
So we're going to go through the concept of brotherhood all the way up to Freemasonry now, but where did it start? So the reason why I got this legit Spartan helmet up here is because it's kind of where I believe the concept, I mean, granted they went beforehand, but the real concept of brotherhood kind of started, I think, personally with the Spartans, with their trials and tribulations and all that stuff. And we're going to kind of talk about that, and then we're going to compare it to kind of what we do today. Right. But let's just go through what the quote-unquote definition of brotherhood is.
Okay.
Although much lip service is paid to the brotherhood in this country by preachers, teachers, and politicians. Oh, I see what you're doing.
Yeah, I was just fixing it.
The concept remains poorly misunderstood. Poorly understood. For the purposes of this article, the brotherhood ideal is defined broadly as a behavior among adult male human beings of the same generation, belonging to the same extended family, and living in a community that ensures maximum well-being and survivability of the entire family or community. In other words, it's a behavior that maximizes the social welfare function of the entire family or community. A sisterhood ideal can be defined in a big word.
Sound it out. Gradually?
No, right there.
Oh, analogously.
Analogously. Thank you. See, I would have never got that. I would have never got that.
The same as. So sisterhood is analogous to brotherhood in that.
Two big words for me. Two big words.
Well, that's right. That's what I'm here for.
I can't do it. Yeah, that's what you're here for. Brotherhood, right?
Yeah, brotherhood.
Mm-hmm. And group-enhancing behavior of family members of both sexes might be termed the brotherhood-sisterhood ideal. Since this behavior is learned gradually as the individual matures, brotherhood, it can be described as voluntary in the sense that it is not imposed by legal authority external to the family.
Hmm.
Okay.
I'm hearing a lot of things that resonate with like some of our charges, you know, like.
Yep. Yeah. So let's kind of go through what the Spartans used to do. And this is from Evan Andrews on history.com. And we know that the Spartans were a warrior society.
Mm-hmm.
And that warrior society started from the very, very beginning.
Oh, from birth.
From birth, yep. Yeah. Spartans had to improve their fitness even as infants. Infanticide.
Yeah. It's not good.
Was a disturbingly common act in the ancient world, which is, can you want to describe what infanticide
is? It's basically you kill a baby because it doesn't meet your standards, right? Or your perceived standards, right? So in the case of the Spartans.
Had they been small or puny, they would have been discarded.
So, I mean, it's a really messed up thing. But if a baby is deformed or has some kind of birth defect, the Spartans would not allow it to survive because
it would be discarded.
Yeah, because everybody had to contribute to basically the war effort and the defense of
making a lot of movie references here.
Yeah,
that was
just ignoring.
That was from 300.
That was Well, that movie I have seen. That is a great.
It's
film.
A great movie.
Yes.
Spartans, what is your profession? Love that movie.
Yes.
But in Sparta, this practice was organized and managed by the state, so the government would just fling them off a bridge or a...
Yeah. You can imagine what that's like as a young parent and the government just comes and is like, yeah, not going to make the cut.
Kind of shitty.
Toss it into a volcano.
Pretty much. All Spartans...
I mean, that's why these guys were as hard as they were, these men and women, man. Like, it's messed up.
All Spartan infants were brought before a council of inspectors and examined for physical defects. This kind of is prior to the Brotherhood thing. I want to be clear. We're not flinging infants off of anything.
No, there's no.
Or burying them under the lodge.
No, yeah. Nope.
None of that shit's going on.
Nope.
But we're just kind of going through the Spartan thing until we get up to... We're going to talk about, you know, the trials and tribulations as they advanced. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what we do in Masonry. You yep. advance from entered apprentice to fellowcraft. Yep. So I would say, I mean, if we're making a comparison, your infancy or your infanticide would probably occur.
Infanticide,
whatever.
You'll get it.
Would occur during your EA degree. I mean, I don't know about you, but how many EAs have come through your lodge that got yoinked out before they took their fellowcraft?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually part of the ritual of the degree that if you at any time during your entered apprentice degree, if you're not found worthy, we can yoink you.
Correct.
We're not going to throw you into a volcano, but you're not going to you're not going to advance.
I mean, there's some Master Masons I wouldn't mind throwing in a volcano, but
we're not going to name names.
We won't name names.
come on.
Anyway, all Spartan infants were brought before a council of inspectors and examined for defects. Those who weren't up to the standards were left to die. The ancient historian Plutarch.
Oh, yeah, he's cool.
Claimed these ill-born Spartan babies were tossed into the chasm?
Chasm, yeah.
By the foot of the Mount Tigatus? Yeah,
So basically, they like threw these children into a river valley.
But most historians now dismiss this as a myth. If a Spartan baby was judged to be unfit for future duty as a soldier, it was most likely abandoned on a nearby hillside.
Oh, yeah, because that's better.
So much better.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
That's dark.
Left alone, the child would either die of exposure or be rescued and adopted by strangers. Well, let's go with that part. I hope that's the case. Babies who passed inspection still didn't have it easy. To test their constitutions, Spartan infants were often bathed in wine instead of water. That's freaking awesome.
As an adult, I'd be pretty cool with that. As an infant, I mean, that stuff.
Drink the whole goddamn bathtub.
George, what are you doing?
Oh, shit. Let's see here. They were also frequently ignored when they cried and commanded never to fear darkness or solitude. According to Plutarch, these tough love parenting techniques were so admired by foreigners that Spartan women were widely sought after for their skill as nurses and nannies.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I mean,
these women were sought after?
They're going to make that kid hard, but it's also going to be horribly, horribly... traumatized for the rest of its days. But I guess.
C.W. Hatton, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, welcome. And Scott Blanchard makes a great point, which is it's probably a tribal phenomenon. Yeah, so Brotherhood probably reaches back much further than the Spartans, of course. But
I just went with Sparta because I got a nice Spartan helmet right here.
Yeah, and there's a shared initiatic experience that Spartans went through, and obviously warfare and stuff creates a bond that's similar to...
And
what we have here,
we're going to discuss that too.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Let's see here. At the age of 7, Spartan boys were removed from their parents' homes and began the Agogi, a state-sponsored training regiment designed to mold them into skilled warriors and moral citizens. Separated from their families and housed in communal barracks, the young soldiers in waiting were instructed in scholastics, warfare, stealth, hunting, and athletics. At the age of 12, initiates were deprived of all clothing save for a red cloak and forced to sleep outside and make their own beds from reeds. To ready them for a life in the field, the boys' soldiers were also encouraged to scavenge and even steal their food, though if detected, they were punished by floggings.
Wow, so that's like a real-life lesson in stealth. Like, yeah, you can steal the food that you need to survive.
But if we catch you, we're going to beat the shit out of you.
Yeah.
So, as you see, you know, I think this is more, if we're going to compare it to modern-day Freemasons, this is similar to the Fellowcraft. Fellowcraft, you go through a journey.
Yeah, it's kind of your rite of passage.
Your rite of passage. You're taught about this, that, and the other thing. I'm not going to get into specifics, but you're taught about this, that, and everything. It's an educational thing.
Yep.
And, again, in the same respect as us, you're still going through this thing. Yeah. Right?
You're going through a process that everybody, every adult in your community had to go through. So a little bit similar to Freemasonry. And you're going through it with your peers.
Uh-huh.
Right? You have other children that are the same age as you that are going through these same life lessons. So there you have your shared experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just as all Spartan men were expected to be fighters, all women were expected to bear children. Spartan girls were allowed to remain with their parents, but they were also subject to rigorous education and training program. While boys were readied for a life in the campaign, girls practiced dance, gymnastics, and javelin discus throwing, and were thought to make them physically strong for motherhood. Hazing and fighting were encouraged among Spartan children.
Hmm.
Wish they could do that today.
Yeah, no, we don't do that.
Toughen these little fuckers up.
Oh, Jesus. We don't do that in Freemasonry, by the way. There's no hazing or
talking about society.
People
damn it.
To try to make them well, yes, in society.
These little sons of bitches up, develop leather skin, if you will.
Yeah, I don't know if I fully agree with your parenting style, but I can see the merits of it. Shit. I can see the merits of it. I'm not gonna say that you're evil. It's a strong word.
I'm going to go home and kick my kid. No, I'm kidding. I would not do that. I'm joking around.
We do not do that.
Much of the Spartan agoge involved typical school subjects like reading, writing, rhetoric, and poetry. But the training regimen also had a vicious side. To toughen the young warriors and encourage their development as soldiers, instructors and older men would often instigate fights and arguments between trainees. The agoge was partially designed to help make the youths resistant to hardships like cold, hunger, and pain, and boys who showed signs of cowardice or timidity were subject to teasing and violence by peers and superiors alike.
Yeah, so they encouraged bullying, basically, to harden your constitution. That's, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the way it was in former years up until a certain point. But
let's be clear.
Definitely don't, you know, that's not how we roll.
But let's be clear. This is a different time in history.
Yep.
You didn't have shit. They weren't able to go to Big Y and just freaking grab bloop, bloop, bloop. Like, they had to, like, fight in battle and go after they had to get every freaking meal.
Yeah.
Basically.
Defend their community. And psychology as a science did not exist back then. So it wasn't like anybody was going to be like, yeah, maybe bullying is not such a good idea, because then they get thrown in a volcano. Like
Scott Blanchard.
Sounds like gangrene was running the playground. Yeah, exactly. It's like if gangrene was like running your local community, it would be very similar.
Well, let's compare it to Discord. You come into Discord, you get hazed. Like, it's just, you come into our Discord channel, gangrene, they're the Spartan
Yeah, I mean, it used to be friendly ball busting, but it's bordering on hazing now.
Yeah, it's bordering on hazing now, let's be real. But like, here's the thing though, like it's a rite of passage. Everything has a rite of passage. You know, like, you come in, you get your balls busted, you get made fun of, you get put down. And I'm saying not all Discord is like this. It's only if you come in looking for it. If you come in looking for it, you're going to find it. You know what I mean? If you're just coming to just, you know, do whatever, you get pretty much left alone. You know, everybody talks to you. It's a normal thing. Like, you get a little bit of hazing, but if you fire back. You know,
it's part of the community.
Part of the community.
Yes. It's brotherhood of a sort.
Ken don't like it.
I don't know. You know me. I don't have a strong constitution like a Spartan. I would have been, you know, would have been one of the ones that was probably fed to wolves or to die of exposure after the first trial.
Pretty much. Even Spartan girls were you wouldn't last 5 minutes in the sun.
No, not at all. Flame. Yeah, no, no. Yeah, the harsh Greek sun. Just kill me. Kill me now.
Even Spartan girls were known to participate in this ritualized hazing. During certain religious and state ceremonies, girls would stand before Spartan dignitaries and sing choral songs about the young men on the agoge, often singling out specific trainees for ridicule in order to shame them into stepping up their performance.
That's
all right, so now we're kind of getting, I mean, comparison to the Master Mason degree, where now you're starting to earn your bones, in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, and this is what I just want to say, like, you know, and this is in Masonry in a sense, and I kind of want to drive on this, because there have been EAs that come, or not even EAs, petitioners, we'll even go back further than that, that come in, and the first thing they say is, oh, I can't wait to get to Lodge so I can teach you this. Like, you haven't even stepped the threshold.
I don't know that I've ever heard that.
You never heard that?
I've heard a lot of things from petitioners.
Oh,
like,
man.
Oh, I can't wait to get my ring. Oh, I can't wait to learn about such and such. I've never had one that say, I can't wait to teach you about
this. I've talked about this before. When I was secretary, I always did the initial screening. I met him. I talked to him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
you were the membership coordinator.
I was the membership coordinator. Yeah. Guy's coming in talking about he sees the Virgin Mary on a piece of freaking toast or some shit like that. I'm like, this guy's got to go.
Volcano.
Yeah.
So you were like the initial Westgate.
I was the initial Westgate, right? And I did. I had a petitioner come in, and he was, he was basically, I have this to teach you. I have that to teach you. I'm going to teach you about this. I'm going to teach you about that. And he went on a tirade about what he's going to teach us. And again, this is an immediate turnoff for me. Yeah. Immediately, I stop. Right? And I don't care if you're an EA fellow craft. Like, you haven't even gone through the entire thing yet. You haven't even seen what we have to offer you. Yep. And you're already talking about, I can't wait to show you this. I can't wait to show you that. No, that's not how this works.
I dig it. I kind of admire the enthusiasm.
I admire the enthusiasm.
You know, because we all have something to learn from new members. But, yeah, I mean, maybe kind of like go through the whole experience first.
Go through the whole experience and then do it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in comparison to this, I mean, this is kind of, you know, let's go to Spartan. You don't think a 7-year-old's going to be like, I'm going to teach you how to fight.
Yeah.
He's going to get his ass whooped.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, fair enough.
You got to kind of earn the respect
of the community.
Yeah. Earn your bones before you can. You're not going to throw a 7-year-old in Sparta on the front lines to fight.
Right, right.
You're going to throw somebody who's been trained and knows what's going on.
Yeah, and had a little bit of the old boot camp beat down. And in the Spartans' case, all of the teenage girls are going to write songs about how much you suck in the interim. But eventually, you know, you're going to earn your right to be named among their peers.
So with this petitioner, what I met down at Jimmy's downstairs, I mean, he was just going buck wild about this, that, and the other thing. And talking about, I'm going to teach you this, I'm going to teach you that, you know, I've done this, I've done that. Like, it's like, bro, slow down. You haven't even taken your EA yet. You haven't even stepped in the door yet. You have no idea what's coming.
Did he ever, I mean, we don't have to name names, obviously. Did he ever?
No, he never came back.
Didn't even petition?
I kind of told him, you know, in a friendly way. I said to him, I'm like, listen, like, you know, that's cool. I think that's great that you know all this stuff. And, I'm sure Alex DeFranzo, he's big into esoteric before he even hit the door. He basically was like, oh, I've studied this, I've studied that. That's freaking great. But Alex knew.
Yeah, he wasn't trying to
teach. I'm going to shut the fuck up, but I can't wait to see what's going to happen.
Yeah. And once he becomes an MM. You know what he ended up doing?
He's got a...
He started an esoteric club at Harmony Lodge. It's actually this afternoon.
C'est la vie, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it's very successful. Like, there are a lot of brothers that look forward to going there and having discussions about esoteric topics, but he did it the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. Learn. You get all the way up to the top of the tier, and then if you have knowledge, then give it out.
Yeah.
This guy was, I mean, right out the freaking gate down in Jimmy, man, he was fucking all over it. He was like, yo, and then I swear to God, I make a joke about the Virgin Mary and a piece of toast. I don't think it was a Virgin Mary and a piece of toast, but he showed me
a
piece
something similar.
Something similar. I think it was a piece of wood. He's like, oh, yeah, I was cutting this the other day, and here, look. I'm like, whew. Like, cool that you see things?
Yeah.
If that's what you believe, it's cool. If you believe that, maybe it's great. I don't know if
maybe
I'm going to
feel out a brotherhood before you start like revealing that type of information. You know what I mean?
I kind of compare it to the guy you meet who's just doing this, just petting his imaginary. You know, you see my cat?
That's
what the fuck?
That's like, real creepy.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe you see it.
What
that's cool.
Are you talking
I don't
about?
See it, but it kind of it throws you a little bit, right? Yeah. You're going to be like, what the fuck? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm just. I'd
yeah, we're not crapping on anybody's beliefs.
Not
here
crapping
anything,
on your beliefs. Don't please don't take it that way.
Just,
you know.
You know. Maybe
earn your bones.
Yeah.
Earn your bones.
Or just you know feel out who you're talking to before you reveal things like.
More so, listen.
Might be construed as crazy.
When you are petitioning for a lodge, listen to what the membership committee, if you will, or your initial screener is saying, and answer questions. You know, answer questions, but don't come in as I know more than you because it makes you sound ignorant. You may not be. You may be this. You may be Albert fucking Einstein. That's great. You could be the smartest. But when you come in hard like that, like he did that petitioner.
I mean, that's going to turn off any organization. It turns it off. Right? Like, that's just like basic human nature. Like, don't walk in at the ground level of some organization and pretend like you already, like, you can just test out of everything, right? Like, that's not really going to get you anywhere in life with any group, and certainly not with three majors.
And I want to be clear, this guy also had other things going on in his life that didn't really align with Freemasonry. So it wasn't just, that wasn't the nail in the coffin. That wasn't the coffin nail, but you put all these things together. Again, understand, when we meet you for the first time, like when I did it, when I meet you, I'm trying to get a profile on you. I'm trying to understand what you're all about. I'm trying to learn what you're all about.
Yep.
You know,
which is kind of part of the job if you're a membership coordinator or a secretary of a lodge, right? You're that first filter.
Yeah. So I mean,
like, is this guy of good moral character? I mean, if you can eliminate, you know, we're looking at things that immediately eliminate, not to say that we're not trying to increase membership. Obviously we are, but
yeah,
like,
but see here, we're not just trying to put warm bodies in freaking seats. Right. We're not trying to put asses in seats.
Yeah. It's a lot easier when you're like the initial screener to say, okay, well, these are the things that we're definitely against. And if somebody checks one of those boxes, it's like, okay, you're out.
Right. And I mean, realistically, like, you know, what I did when I was secretary, I did a profile thing. Like, and you know, the other thing you can't do is when I first meet you and I ask, oh, you ever been in trouble with law or anything?
Then you just say, all right, now instantly, research needed.
I mean, red flags are flying at this point. Just come up like, yeah, I got caught doing this. Or maybe you didn't.
Yeah, and that speaks to moral character too, right? If you're going to be transparent with somebody, like, look, it's just you and me talking, right? I'm not like, I don't work for the government. I'm not a cop or anything. Like, it's just two human beings talking, and you're proposing to join an organization where we only accept people of good moral character. If you're transparent with me, it's going to go a lot further than just like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. What do you consider to be trouble with the law? Then it's like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to make a note.
Did you diddle kids? What the fuck? Like, what are we talking about?
There's
a
spectrum there, so why don't you just come clean? You
know? Yeah.
It doesn't immediately disqualify you, but if you vacillate about it or you lie about it and we find out that you're lying about it, like, it's immediate disqualification. I don't know any lodge that would be okay with that.
I mean, and again, kind of going back on that, like, I suck with words. I can't do words, but I'm immediately, I can pick up on
you're
body
okay
language.
With ritual, which is kind of amazing to me. You're good at ritual, but you can't read an article on Wikipedia.
No.
I don't know how that works. You're a modern Marvel.
Nope. But, you know, there's one thing that I'm not book smart. I'm not as smart as my own. Like, I'm not book smart. I almost made you spit that shit. I know I did.
Yeah. I wish you were saying that with a Spartan helmet on.
On sideways.
George to a T.
My head ain't going to fit in that thing sideways. But,
hey guys, I'm ready for war.
I'm like the hunched over hunchback in freaking 300.
Oh, that guy, yeah. But you know what? He turns out to, oh no, he turns.
No, he turns on him, the son of a bitch. He shows him the goat path. What was I going to say? There's one thing that I'm really good at, and that's reading people. Just reading your body language and reading your personality. I mean, I make a profile of you within maybe 10, 15 minutes talking to you.
Yeah,
I know what you're all about.
Those types of brothers are the perfect ones to be membership coordinators too. Like Right Worshipful Brother Marty was our secretary and de facto membership coordinator, and he was a police officer.
He was a cop.
He was really good at, like, you have a coffee with somebody, and like in within 5 minutes, he knows whether you're going
to
fit in or
there
not.
There are certain things to look for.
Yeah.
Their posture, their stance, if your arms are folded. Like, these are all major things. Like, we're kind of getting off on a tangent here, but, you know, for somebody who's listening to this and thinking about petitioning a lodge, these are things to think about. Don't cross your arms, because it's very standoffish. It's very sheltered. It's hidden. You're trying to hide things. You know, don't be overly, like, if you're going to go have a drink, let's say down at Jimmy's, like, I'll get into that in a minute. But
don't just get plowed.
Don't get hammered.
Need double.
Now, here, let me tell you, there's a little trick of the trade here. I mean, this is just me. I always took them downstairs to Jimmy's and had a drink or two with them. Here's why.
To see
what happens. What happens, Kenny.
Yeah.
What happens when you have a couple drinks in you?
You tend to be a little bit more open verbally.
So that was my way. I'm like, all right, let's see what he's got. You know, get one or two little vodka and tonics inside of him. Next thing you know, They start singing like a goddamn canary.
Jesus Christ. You're like a Russian spy or something. Like, I will take him down to the
tavern. I will take him down, give him cigarette and vodka.
Yes. And then he will talk.
Then he will talk. I make him talk. No, all joking aside, but this is what, and again, I'm a little bit more cynical in it, I guess I would say.
Yeah, but we all
I want to get to know you. Yeah. Because most people are going to come in and they're going to be quiet and they're going to reserve. They're going to be like, I'm not going to say shit because I don't want to get rejected.
Or they feel like they're being, harshly investigated or something like that. Look, we're just
loosen them up a little bit.
We're talking about ways that brotherhoods elucidate whether or not, or determine whether or not somebody's going to make the cut.
We're not going to throw you in a volcano, but I'm going to throw a couple volcano drinks down your throat to find out what you're all about. I want to get to know you. I want to see how loose you can be, how comfortable you're going to be. Granted, everybody's going to be scared coming up here the first time. Like, I don't know any of these guys.
I mean, you can't judge anybody based on, hey, man, like, there's a bunch of people, like, asking me questions. Like, that's kind of intimidating no matter who you are.
Of course.
But outside of that, if you're, like, you know, covering stuff up or just not being forthcoming about things or transparent, it's
consequently going to be your red flag. The flip side of that. The goddamn person who's being the original, we'll call him screener, we'll call him whatever the hell you want to call him, the membership
or whatever,
manager or whatever the hell. Don't be a stoic fuck either.
You have to be like a conversationalist.
Yeah, be a conversationalist, be open, like, then, goof, laugh, talk, joke, don't just be a stick in the freaking mud. Do you believe in God?
Yeah, exactly. Don't just go through the
have you ever been checklist. In trouble with law enforcement? Like, don't do that. Because
and
not,
making notes and stuff while they're, notes, like, sweating. Like,
oh, my God.
That's not how we roll.
Put your fucking notepad away. Put it away. This goes for especially DDs. I love when DDs do that. District deputies, excuse me. When they're doing an inspection and they got their fucking notepad out.
They kind of have to.
No, you don't.
You got to fill the form out. What are you going to do? Do it all from
do the form afterward. That's what I did. I'm not going to sit there and every time a brother makes a freaking wrong step, I'm going to be like, I don't do that shit.
Okay.
I'm going to sit there. I'm going to observe. At the end, if it was something noteworthy, I'm going to remember it.
All right, fair enough.
If it's not noteworthy, you don't need to have your notepad out examining every goddamn thing that's going on, because all you're doing is putting that lodge on ice.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You're making them screw up more. Put the notepad away.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
I feel like yelling today.
They're coming from the right. They just want to not forget something. But yes, it does. I agree with you that it will intimidate the lodge and make people. Yeah, it's like don't do that. They're already under enough pressure. You know, every lodge is trying to pass an inspection and do their best. Don't make it harder on them.
Luminous Knight. When I first met with the investigation committee, they made a bunch of goat jokes. I didn't have a goat. I didn't have a clue what they were talking about. It really gave me pause.
I wouldn't recommend doing that as an investigating committee. The goat thing is like, you know, you kind of learn about that, and it's a jokey kind of thing.
It's a joke amongst Mason, see, like, here's the problem I have with with the goat jokes, all right? Mm-hmm. It's a joke amongst Masons that excludes the fucking new guy.
Right, yeah. Yep, yeah. Yeah, it's not something you want to do during an investigation
Shit. Yeah. Not during an investigation committee. And
it's about the candidate.
It's about the candidate.
And his questions and making sure that any of, you know, our questions are answered. But it's not a firing squad.
It's not an investigation committee time to make goat jokes.
Right.
You want to do that after their fellow craft to be? But like, hey, man, you know the next degree, you got to ride a goat. What? Yeah, you got to ride a goat, man. Like, all right. Now they're already part of, you know, they're part of the lodge. They're fellow craft. They're starting to warm up to the jokes and the humor of the lodge.
Don't
do that shit prior. Like, come on now. Yeah. All right, let's get back in
this. Well, I mean, that speaks to making sure that you're really careful about who you name membership coordinator.
Correct.
And who you put on investigating committees. These are important things. It's not just, hey, you know, are they active in the lodge? We're going to stick a body in the chair and have them investigate this guy. Like, make sure that these brothers can vouch for the character of that candidate before the lodge. Because if the brothers that are voting, that are balloting on that incoming petitioner don't personally know them, it's implicit that they're going to take your recommendation as part of the investigating committee or the top or bottom line signer. So make sure those brothers are qualified.
Let's hit these comments real quick because we got a couple of them. I didn't realize you have so many. Chris Love, I'm not saying it's right, but I did a lot of research on Freemasonry prior to joining, and I was bringing up stuff I learned because I wanted to talk about it with the Master Masons. Multiple MM said, I don't know that. you know more than most guys here. And one of them said, can you teach me a lesson on that? Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, you approached it the right way. You didn't walk in saying, you know.
Yeah. Zach Deering, you knew everything already. Good morning, guys. Turning my petition Thursday. Hey, congratulations.
Yeah, welcome.
I believe we'll be having a dinner first. Can't wait. Yeah, it's probably going to be green beans.
Yeah, but you know what? The dinner is one of the most important parts of the whole thing because that's where you're going to meet and greet these guys and talk to them as men and figure out whether or not, you know, the lodge is right for you and if Freemasonry in general is right for you. I highly, highly encourage going to a dinner before a meeting or to an event or something like that before you drop a petition.
Correct. Jeb, Worshipable Brother, Past Master. It's WBPM, unless it's just blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I would think Worshipful Brother Past Master.
It's the Valley, of course they have. I don't get that.
The Valley. Well, maybe he's talking about this valley.
Maybe.
The Naugatuck River Valley that we broadcast from.
Yes.
And smells. Maybe he's local.
And smells every Sunday morning.
It does. Oh, man. The odor. If any of you ever make it to the
Naugatuck poo-poo plant. Yeah,
you will know what we are speaking of.
It's Sunday morning.
Like, it's not like cow manure.
Every Sunday morning, you're going to be like, it's going to be a hot day today.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, in the summertime, it's even worse.
No, you got to look at the temperature. You already know it's going to be above 60 the minute you open your nostrils. Jersey Cowboy, good morning, brethren. I know that I've done shit in my home
morning,
area.
Brother.
All right. All Spartan men. Now we're getting to the Master Mason degree.
Okay.
Which I consider would be the equal to a Master Mason. All Spartan men were expected to be lifelong soldiers. As grueling as Sparta's martial education system could be, the soldier's life was the only option for young men who wished to become equal citizens, or H-O-M-O-I-O-I. We'll go with it.
Homoi.
I don't know. According to the edicts of the Spartan lawmaker and reformer Lycurgus, male citizens were equally prevented from choosing any occupation other than the military. This commitment would last for decades, as warriors were required to remain on reserve duty until the age of 60. 60?
Well,
holy shit.
Think about how hard these dudes were. I mean,
good God.
If you're at the peak of physical performance and you're made to stay at that until the age of 60, I could see you still, you know, hoisting a shield and swinging a sword around, yeah.
Because of their preoccupation with the study of warfare, Sparta's manufacture and agriculture were left entirely to the lower classes. Skilled laborers, traders, and craftsmen were part of the Perochi, a class of free non-citizens who lived surrounding region of Laconia. Meanwhile, agricultural and food production fell to the enslaved Helots, a servile class that made up the majority of Sparta's population. Mm-hmm. Ironically, constant fear of Helot revolts and uprisings.
Is it like H-E-L-A-T-E?
No, H-E-L-O-T. Helot.
Helot, yeah.
Revolts and uprisings was a major reason why the Spartan elite became so devoted to building a strong military in the first place. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. But if you're seeing, though, like, their warrior class, the ones that actually lived a lifelong military. They're full citizens. Yeah. They were your Master Masons. They were caught above the rest.
Yeah.
So I kind of compared that to our craft a little bit.
Yeah, you know? I mean, they had a very weird structure where, like, it was still an agrarian society, right? You still have to grow crops and hunt and gather and so forth, but it's like all of that was
left to the lower classes.
It was left to basically slaves.
Yeah.
For the most part. It's like they were...
Well, you had lower classes and then you had the Helots.
Right, yeah.
So you had the Perkoshi or whatever, which were the lower class. They were the ones who did all the freaking grunt work.
Yeah, probably.
And then the Helots were the ones that did even
blacksmiths,
lower.
Like basically anything that wasn't, you know, military.
It's almost like the Perkoshi were like skilled laborers.
Yeah.
They had a trade. The blacksmiths, like you were saying, stuff like that.
And then the majority of the population was made up from Helots?
No, the majority of the population was the Perkoshi.
That middle class.
Yes, the middle class.
Gotcha.
So those are your average people.
All right.
But your Spartan soldiers.
That's the profane world, right?
The Spartan soldiers were your, or I would even go with a fellow craft and an apprentice Master Mason.
Okay.
Your Master Masons would be your soldiers, if you will.
Right.
They had that brotherhood camaraderie. Fellow craft would be your Perkoshi, which is your labor, your middle. And realistically, if you compare it to the lecture of the apron.
Yeah, but you can't go from one to the other in Spartan society. You can't go from slave to middle class blacksmith to soldier, right? I kind of see that progression as, like you described it earlier, like the children, right, being taken away from their parents at age 7.
We don't take your children. I want to be fucking clear about that.
No, not at all. And then the coming of age, right? The fellow crab, like trials you have to go through to get to that kind of full citizen status in the military side of things. And then your master mason is you are a full citizen in Spartan society.
Correct.
You know, from the age of whatever, I don't know, 12 or 11 until 60.
Mm-hmm.
But those other classes, I would just kind of see them as, you know, the analogy for Freemasonry would be like the profane world, right? It's like the rest of the world. Like, I'm pretty sure they're not hanging out at parties together.
No.
All right.
Jed, Warshul brother, past master. The committee insisted in interviewing me at my apartment. Yeah, they try to. Because they want to get to, you know, understand it's an investigation.
Yeah, they want to see your space, and usually people are more comfortable in their own.
I tried to explain that I really do not live there anymore. I had moved in with my fiance. Could we meet at a country club that I manage? Okay.
Yeah.
No, had to meet at my shitty bachelor pad in New Haven. Hated that.
So first of all, New Haven.
Yeah, so he's his local brother.
He is a local brother. That's why he knows of the value.
New Haven, that's got to be Hiram 1. They're pretty.
Could be. Or it could be Worcester. Cosmo? It could be Worcester, because we were down there doing the Garibaldi degree a couple weeks ago, and I met some brothers.
Cosmo, I think, meets down there, too, right? Cosmopolitan.
Yeah, they do as well. Masonic Philosophical Lodge Research, I think, too.
I mean, it really depends on the investigation committee. Most of the time, they don't like meeting you at your place of work. They would rather meet you where... at least our lodge, we try to meet you where you live.
And every lodge has different standards on that. Like, usually in our lodge, for example, we prefer to meet you where you live as long as you're okay with that, because people tend to be more comfortable there, and also we kind of get an idea of what you're about.
Because you walk in the door and there's cocaine lines cut in the freaking...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's not the chief reason. The chief reason is because we like people to feel comfortable, right? If you feel more comfortable meeting in a neutral location, we'll do that. Like, we're not going to say, nope, it invalidates your membership if we don't investigate
you. I'm looking for cocaine lines. It's just me.
Yeah, well, that's because you're Officer Gruff over there doing investigating committees. Some of us are normal people, and we're not profiling everybody we meet.
Yeah. He said, no, I had to meet at my shitty bachelor pad. The only thing I would have made that funnier is if he turned on the light and the disco ball turned down. The whole ceiling's mirrored.
You're kidding me? This guy's in.
That would be freaking great. Anyway. All right, so let's move on to another concept of brotherhood, and this is defined as in the military. This is actually a military definition of it.
Okay.
So we know that military, police, all that, they consider themselves a brotherhood. I mean, Christ, in the United States, we have the flags for the brotherhood. It shows the brotherhood of military. It's the green flag, the green line.
Yep.
You have the thin blue line flag, which is the American flag with a thin little blue line through it for law enforcement, red fire department, and so on and so forth. And it's the concept of brotherhood. And I mean, realistically, it's not a, and I say brotherhood, but it could be brotherhood, sisterhood, whatever the case may be. I mean, it's kind of interchangeable, I think. You know, we're just talking about brotherhood.
I don't think we're speaking in gender terms.
Yeah, like, no,
brotherhood is just a camaraderie, a bond, sense that of you bond. Share with somebody else that's one of your peers.
Right. Yeah. So I just want to be clear, we're not defining brotherhood as men only. The only reason why we're kind of using brotherhood is because that's what Freemasons use. I mean, we're brothers. Yeah. You know what I mean? We're males. So here we go. As defined in the military brotherhood, so many of the blessings that accompany having brother or sister, and so often it is that in times when one cannot be strong for themselves, the times when one needs to just a little bit of extra motivation, the times when this is why is this written so freaking weird?
What website is it from?
Combat Veterans Careers.
Yeah. Probably because ChatGPT wrote that article.
Yeah. The times when accomplishing something is better when not alone, does that companionship and that bond define itself to us? All through our lives, innate to being a human is the search to find that type of bond with others ever present. However, there is a calling that draws people together where they are able to establish an environment that breeds the brotherhood that has been sought in every corner of one's life. Upon signing the dotted line and reserving a place among the world's most elite fighting force, one enters into the unparalleled brotherhood that is the United States military. All right, got better. The United States military has a unique ability to define brotherhood, apostrophe, quotation, sisterhood, not in words, but in actions. So let's be clear about this while we're in the Orange 143, now live in Florida.
Yeah, so that he was a member of Orange 143, I think in the New Haven area. Maybe that was in Orange, Connecticut. I don't know. And now he lives in Florida, so that's what he was saying, because we were asking what lodge he was a member of. So.
Gotcha.
He's an expat from up here in the Northeast. Welcome, brother.
So let's go into the concept of that, of brotherhood, or sisterhood, whatever you want to call it. We're going to go with brotherhood for now.
Yep.
But, yeah, what they're basically saying is that brotherhood is defined not in terms of, oh, we both took an oath, or we both took an agreement, or both belong to the same thing, but it's your actions that actually make you brother.
It's your shared experience.
Your shared experience, as well as the things we do for each other. Like,
and they also noted that you know, men, women, whoever will actively seek it out. And I think that's an important characteristic. Mm-hmm. I think it goes back to what our brother here was saying about like it being tribal. Mm-hmm. I think there's an innate human need to have that level of interconnectedness, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's probably from our, you know, our primal roots, where the world was a very dangerous place, and you don't get through it unless you have a group of individuals that are of like mind around you that are helping you to, you know, get the community and get the tribe through all of these perils that you have to deal with. So that's important, and I think, you know, their point is like, yeah, the military fulfills that in a lot of people. Well, and we've talked about this with the MOVE campaign, and you know, when you talked about, what was it, like the five or six different archetypes of, you know, the types of people that
join
approach Freemasonry. Yep. They're like the former prior military folks.
Because they're looking for that brotherhood again that they don't have anymore.
They sought it out. They found it. And then when they left it, you know, you don't have anything that kind of fills that void for you.
I mean, you can make somewhat of a comparison to our lodge, the Morningstar. I mean, a lot of the guys that come here, they're Sikorsky. They're not military, but they all work together.
Yeah.
And they come here and they see each other. It's out of work. Yeah, they get to see each other outside of you know, building freaking helicopters. Yeah. You know what
and
I mean?
And that's like, a shared experience.
It's a shared experience.
Like, you're not, you know, you're not getting bullets aren't flying at you or anything, but, you know, there's a lot of kind of stress that you have to deal with at work. And, like, yeah, you got your work friends that kind of help you get through it. And I mean, you're in Freemasonry, you've got guys from all walks of life.
And you got other, I mean, a big one is police. We have a lot of police officers in Connecticut who are Masons.
Firefighters,
Every day, those men and women are challenged and are sometimes put into situations where the camaraderie builds itself, and the men and women are able to build each other. The uniform only lays the foundation for what brings these select and exceptional men and women together. It is a call to duty, the ideals, and the shared title of being American and believing in what that means, that truly binds the servicemen and women together across all five branches. Yes, this is true. There's a lot of shit talking across.
But patriots. At the end of the day.
And you know, I unfortunately feel is something that, you know, we as a nation in the United States we've somewhat lost our identity. I mean, I look at, you know, after World War II when we beat the Japanese, they had that huge parade in New York City with the American flags flying and confetti and everything. And there was a sense of national pride amongst that. And it's something
we were the
United 9/11.
States. Yeah.
After 9/11,
and
there was another one.
It takes tragedies like that and just, you know, world wars and so forth to instill that and reinstill it in a new generation.
I'm going
to
nerd out real quick.
That happens so infrequently with you.
There's a game that was on PlayStation 3. I think it was Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2.
Okay.
Where the
that
general
franchise is still around.
It was either two or three. Yeah, but it was like it was a Modern Warfare 3 or 2, one of the two. But it was Colonel the story. There's a storyline to it. There's Colonel Shepard, who they had this Russian guy who, you know, was popping nukes off this here and there and all that stuff, and they facilitated the invasion of the Russians into the United States and blah 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 blah. But in the storyline, he shoots one of the guys who you think Colonel Shepard is a good or General Shepard is a good guy, but he ends up shooting one of his own guys, and he said, you know, yeah, I started this war with the Russian guy because there's a lack of patriotism in the country, and this is how we're going to get it back.
Oh, that's some dark nonsense.
That's some dark shit, right? Yeah. But, you know, unfortunately, it does ring true is that, you know, we're a nation, the United States is a nation that, yeah, we do a lot of infighting, and we're like brothers and sisters, if you will. We fight with each other, just like brothers and sisters fight each other in a household.
Yeah.
But let me tell you what, you fuck around and kick the door down, you will unite a nation
in five seconds.
Yeah.
Don't break into our house.
So I'm just making a point that, you know, even though, you know, this nation's in civil war, it's bullshit.
Yeah, I don't think we're...
Be an outside fucking force that decides to come into this country and find out.
Yeah.
Find out. You'll see.
Hey, Brother James Ferguson, hello, hello from the George Washington Masonic National Memorial. I think that's what GWMNM stands for. Hello, brother. We had a delegation from up here in Connecticut, Scottish Rite Brothers, that went down to the George Washington Memorial recently. So got some great photos from that, and a couple of brothers from my lodge spoke very highly of the brotherhood that was enjoyed by the fellows that were down there at that memorial. So thank you for that.
So I'm going to read this last one, and then there's a great quote from a book, Mark Bowden, the novel Black Hawk Down, A Story of Modern War. Mm-hmm. There's a great quote, and I think it rings true to what we are too. The choices that are often faced, especially in times of conflict where many are positioned abroad and in dangerous situations, sometimes are as difficult as in life or death, and the brotherhood that embraces and instilled in and propagated amongst the U.S. armed forces make the choice between yourself and another natural. In other words, you choose the other person.
Right.
There is no greater rapport than in that shared amongst the service members. And this is, I think this quote rings true. Why are you a Freemason? What is brotherhood? I don't get it. I just went with a girl.
No, it was with that Valley accent.
I went with a Valley. I don't understand it. What's all this brotherhood? And this is the quote. When I go home, people ask me, why do you do it? You some kind of war junkie? Like in our case, would be, are you some kind of freak? Are you a nerd?
Yeah.
I won't say a word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. And that's it. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's from the 2001 film.
Yeah. You're not part of that shared experience.
You won't understand it.
You just won't. So you have zero context.
Won't answer.
It. Yeah. That sums it up pretty nicely, I think.
Yeah.
Petition your local lodge and find out.
That's all I got.
That's part of it.
I think that sums it up pretty well.
Yeah.
It's pretty equal to what we do and what our brotherhood is all about. Scott Blanchard, unfortunately, there is a growing thought that equates the national pride with extreme nationalism, and it is frowned upon.
Yeah. Everything is extreme. It's fashionable to say that everything is extremism.
I'm not going to get on my soapbox. It's too early in the day.
Yeah, exactly. We were having such a nice time. James Ferguson said over 3,000 Masons descended on the adopted city of Brother Washington. Good times had by all. Yeah, I mean, the pictures from that were... What a great time, and the hospitality by you brothers was very, very recognized by the brethren from here in Connecticut. So thanks for that. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Scott Blanchard, I served as a paramedic, firefighter, and ER nurse. Brotherhood, sisterhood is the only way we get by. Yeah. I mean, sometimes this is something I learned in the Judicial Martial Academy. One of the things they talked about was, you know, you're going to see some shit And yeah. you might need to talk to somebody at some point.
Yeah, and how do you deal with that? And who better than the other yeah, the guy next to you who's right. seen the same crap?
Exactly. You know? And realistically, my lieutenant, he made a very good point. He's like, you know, you're going to come home from work and you're going to talk to your significant other. And you're going to say, you know, they're going to be like, oh, you know, let's just say you know, your significant other is a school teacher. Oh, little Timmy, he decided to not eat his sandwich today and he threw it across the room. Your experiences, well, at least, again, in my case, he said, you know, your experience as a judicial marshal, he's like, you're going to watch a dude hang up in a freaking cell. How do you go home and compare that to what your significant other is, yeah. you know, how do they compare it to that experience? And what a lot of guys do is
people where they're at, you know,
and this where a lot of guys will do is they'll just go home and be like, rather than trying to say it, they'll just the your girlfriend, wife, whatever the hell will say, you know, oh, honey, so you know, Timmy did this. How was your day? And he says, oh, it was fine.
Work sucked.
It was end of story. Normal day. Why? Yeah. Because it's not a shared experience. Right. It's not something that the other person's going to relate to. You watching yeah, some dude with his eyes bugging out of his head and freaking blood vessels in his eyes pop because he's hanging from the top of a cell. You can't compare that to little Timmy throwing a sandwich. Like, I'm being honest, though. Like, these are the things that you know, people see.
Yeah.
So how do you're not going to come home and tell your wife about this or your girlfriend or whatever. You're going to be.
Yeah, you're just traumatizing people.
You're traumatizing, they're not going to understand. What did you do? You know, like nothing. I went back to work and continued what I was doing and continued passing out bologna and cheese sandwiches. Yeah. Like,
work is work.
But you can't tell, like, you know, that person, that cop, marshal, Department of Corrections person, they're not going to be able to fully explain to somebody who has zero idea what you're mentally going through.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the difficulties about Freemasonry, too, about describing it to the rest of the world. I mean, we kind of always go back to these canned responses about, oh, it's a system of morality veiled and blah, 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 right? Like that whole thing. Like, it's a great description, but it does not tell you what the important part about Freemasonry is, the brotherhood, the camaraderie that you get out of it. I went to Grand Lodge yesterday, and a lot of people abhor going to Grand Lodge because it's like, oh, we're going to listen to committee reports, and they're so long because it's such a large organization.
Or the 15,000 people that get freaking introduced.
Yeah, I mean, there's pomp and
circumstance. The whole morning of just ass kissing.
But by the same token, I enjoy going because it's like going to a family reunion.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm seeing my extended family and having a drink with somebody from the other side of the state that maybe I see once or twice a year at Grand Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
But we all understand each other as Masons. Right.
Now, let me also elaborate on what I was saying in that respect. You go home, you can't talk to your significant other because mm-hmm. they just don't understand. But I also don't feel comfortable walking into a psychologist's office and sitting down in the freaking, laying down on the couch, like, how did that make you feel?
Yeah.
Right on the paper. I don't want to do that either. So you know what? This is where Freemasonry is good, because that experience of a guy hanging himself in a cell, maybe that's something that, like, Right Worshipful Brother Shane Dufresne, who is a police officer,
he would get it.
He would understand. Yeah. And I feel more comfortable talking to him than anybody else.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's kind of where I make that connection.
Yep.
You know, maybe there's another marshal who's a Mason. Like, we're brothers. We can talk
right.
because we have, again, a shared experience, but also a more in-depth shared experience.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where Masonry is good, you know?
Absolutely.
And this is where brotherhood comes from. Christ, I don't know anything about electrical. Brother Perry does.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know anything about, I know a little bit about carpentry. You're the carpenter. Like, I can ask you, but like, hey.
I am not a carpenter.
I'm just saying.
If you know this about me.
No, but you know.
You and I slapped this thing together, was like.
And you were telling.
This is like the limit of our experience.
You were like, no, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? You built a whole freaking armory or an office downstairs, didn't you?
That's not. I have a contractor that's doing it, but I built the workbench downstairs. Like, I know a little bit about rough framing carpentry.
But you know more than I do. Yeah. So I can lean on you. Yeah. So it's not just about, you know, the freaking ritual part of it. And
right,
that's what people get hanged up on. Oh, oh, you guys are brothers? Why? Because you'd said the same words? No.
Yeah.
It's more than that.
But you can't really describe it, and that's the hard
thing.
You can't
describe it, and I don't even try.
And they talk about it in that article. Like,
especially when guys ask me. They're like, what's the brotherhood all about? Come find out.
Well, yeah.
Find out for your goddamn self.
Or
I can't
watch
explain it to you.
Or listen to the Freemasons podcast.
You can do that.
This is basically what it's like. You know, we'll banter with each other, but we're brothers.
Right.
We'll help each other out.
Think we killed it?
I think we definitely slaughtered it this time, yes.
Cool.
We slayed.
Can I leave with my mask?
Yeah, you can put your mask back on for the sign-off if you really want to. It's such a nice mask, though.
It is. It is.
Or helmet, rather.
It is. I'm going to wear it to work. Think I get in trouble?
You should. You should.
Think morning roll call would be a little interesting?
I don't know.
No one cared until
I have no frame of reference because we don't have that shared experience. You tell me whether they would beat the hell out of you if you walk in wearing that.
My sergeant would be like, George, get the fuck out.
Yeah. You're Mudger, fired.
Mudger, get the fuck You're out. Right. You have the rest of the day off.
Volcano.
Anyway, for the Freemasons podcast, I am Right Worshipful Brother George Mudry signing off.
And Worshipful Brother Ken signing off.
Have a good night, everyone.
Thanks, friends.
No one cared until I put on the mask.